It is a Misery Motown Monday. We head down the home stretch. Final hour of power. Coming up, clean up on aisle three. We'll go through a bunch of the NFL things and stuff that we missed from the weekend while we were in Tampa and traveling all over the place and on to Orlando and pulling an all-nighter and all that stuff. And then I can't wait to get out of here because I'm going to go take a nap before the Monday nighter, San Francisco and the New York Jets. But joining us right now, as he will each and every Monday, I guess we'll do a Tuesday in a couple of weeks because the Commanders will play on Monday Night Football, is Jay Gruden, the former Redskins head coach. And Jay Gruden is driven once again by the Ted Britt Automotive Group, Ted Britt Ford in Chantilly in Fairfax, your F-150 headquarters, Ted Britt Chantilly Lincoln, and Ted Britt Chevrolet in Sterling, home of Ted Britt for Life. Lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at TedBritt.com. We thank them for being back with us again so that we can talk to our pal Jay Gruden again right here on the Team 980. Hello, Jay. How are you, pal?
Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It's great to hear your voice, and I appreciate you joining us again for another year. Before we get to the rest of the NFL, and of course, you can follow Jay on Twitter and make sure you keep up to date with him at, let me see here, let me pull it up so I make sure I get it, the right tag, at Coach underscore Jay Gruden, at Coach underscore Jay Gruden. I've seen a lot of golf shot videos. You're snarling at people. I love it, Jay. I like it. I mean, you know, I like that part about you. You know.
Yeah, thanks. That's a compliment, I guess.
It is. I like when you get real close to the camera and you're just like, you're trying to bite somebody's head off. I like it because that's what we do here. All right, let's get started with this. Obviously, a very, very, very disappointing performance by the Commanders in a lot of different ways on Sunday. Clearly, some of that was to be expected going against a team that's been together for a couple of years, won three straight division titles, Baker's second year, even though they lose Canales. Before we get to Jaden, were you surprised at how, I don't want to say completely one-sided, but largely one-sided that game was, or no surprise at all?
Yeah, I was surprised it was that one-sided. I thought Washington's defense might play a little bit better than that, but, you know, they have trouble. I thought they'd have trouble on the outside with their corners. You know, Forbes still struggling a little bit. St. Juice had some good coverage, but Mike Evans made some very contested catches in the end zone. Those are two good coverages, but two great throws and catches. Didn't get a lot of pass rush, which is disappointing. Defensively, I'm more concerned than offense. You know, I just don't know where they're going to find their answers at as far as rushing the passer and covering guys.
And we've been talking about defensive ends and pressure. It seemed to me like they generated some pressure, especially in the first half, Jay, before maybe the humidity and the legs wore down and all that, but they couldn't close the door. And that is, like, to me, that's the hardest part about pass rush is, okay, you generate the heat, you generate the hurry, but can you close the door? And Baker Mayfield just kept rolling out, buying time, extending, like a good veteran quarterback with mobility should, and they couldn't find a way to, again, stop that, especially on third down.
Yeah, that's the problem. And there's a lot of mobile quarterbacks in the league. There's only a few non-mobile quarterbacks that they're going to have to deal with. Most of these guys in their division, Dak can run around a little bit. Jalen Hurst can run around a little bit. Daniel Jones can run around a little bit. And those teams on their schedule can move. So you got to figure out ways to keep them in the pocket, get them on the grass, and get your punt return team out there. And unfortunately for Washington, that did not happen yesterday. They got to figure out ways to get it done, though, because schedule doesn't get any easier.
No doubt. We'll get back to the defense in a little bit, but your assessment of Jaden Daniels yesterday, we all know the rushing attempts, a lot of it under pressure, not all of it, some by design, the two touchdowns, competitor, you know, little bit of plus and minus, I guess, in the passing game, but overall, big picture, what'd you take away from what you saw out of Jaden Daniels?
Well, he was handcuffed a little bit. I think Cliff did a pretty good job of protecting him in his first game. A lot of screens, ball getting out quick. Didn't take a lot of chances down the field. And when he did call some plays down the field, the pressure got to him and Jaden had to escape and use his legs. You know, he kind of resorted back to his Arizona State days where he'd look at one guy and then he'd turn into a runner. And I think that's what's going to be the case early in his career until he feels comfortable in the pocket, and they get people that can get separation on the outside. You know, other than Terry, I don't know who you're leaning towards to get that separation. You also have a rookie left tackle that you have to worry about calling plays, trying to get these guys open down the field. So they got some issues offensively. Obviously, they utilize the backs pretty well in the passing game. It's good to see Eckler make a couple hits and Brian on the screen make a nice run down the sideline. Ertz had a couple catches, which is good, but they got to figure out ways to get these receivers the ball. Somebody opposite Terry McLaurin has to make some plays somewhere, somehow, some way. Yeah. Where they got to get somebody.
Yeah, and when they had, you know, when they had Terry, first series of the second half, he overthrew him. Earlier, or I guess late second quarter, about 3 minutes left, Terry's first target of the game, he overthrew him along the sidelines, and I don't know if they would have been able to make that connection, but he missed two receivers that I saw screaming over running over the middle that looked to be a better choice. So it's not only finding way, like I said earlier in the show, Jay, and maybe you disagree. I mean, you drafted Terry and you know how good he is. To me, if you can't make that connection deep, or if that is what you want to do, okay, fine, I take a couple of deep shots, but find a way to get Terry quickly on a slant, on a little hitch, on a little smoke screen, whatever it is, just get the ball in his hands, make it easier for Jaden, make it easy for the offensive line, and get Terry an opportunity to make something with a missed tackle or with his legs or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And unfortunately, it didn't work out at all. You know, they didn't really try any slants or any lining them up inside at number two or number three or on the inside, working on across the field or quick outs or whatever it might be to try to give him the ball. And, you know, I think that might be by design. I think they're leaving Terry pretty much in the spot. They're not moving him around a whole lot and are trying to use these other guys.
What's the advantage to that, Jay? I mean, because like,
I don't see one.
Okay. I thought you would answer it that way because obviously you and Sean, when you're here and then Sean has obviously gone, use a ton of motion. Like I was just mentioning, Cooper Kupp was in motion the most amount of snaps last night, according to Next Gen Stats, any player in 7 years. I mean, it was ridiculous. So, like, and that was without Puka Nacua for a lot of the game. And, like, to me, if you're struggling to get something on track, or if you don't like the look, or if something's not right, like, what's the harm in moving a guy around either outside to inside or left to right or right to left or wherever you got to go?
Yeah, it's tough, though, when you have a rookie quarterback. You got to call these motions and change the formations. And
okay.
It becomes very wordy, and sometimes as a rookie quarterback, you want to call basic things early in the season just to try to get them a feel for the game, and then eventually they'll add plays where they'll get Terry moved around at the number two in trips or whatever it might be. Hopefully that's the case. You know, I think first game of the year, probably a little bit more basic than they will be week two, week three, week four, week five, week six, et cetera.
So, no, that makes sense.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. That makes sense. You can follow, again, Jay on X, Twitter, at @coach_JayGruden. Does all sorts of podcasts, Underdog Fantasy, and everything in between here with us each and every Monday, thanks to the Ted Britt Automotive Group once again this year. All right, so you mentioned, obviously, first game. How much of that is, hey, man, Todd Bowles has been at this a long time. He's an uber-aggressive guy. They blitzed him a lot. They pressured him a lot. And you just don't want Jaden to be bogged down by, again, all of these extra parts of the play call, motion, this, that, and the other thing, getting everybody lined up, the new illegal formation rules against an uber-aggressive defense. And maybe the Giants, even though they have a good pass rush, won't be as aggressive now that Wink Martindale is not there.
Yeah, that's true. I think week one against Todd Bowles, if you watch their playoff game against Philadelphia, you probably were scared to death to call a pass play. They blitzed the hell out of Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
So they probably a little bit more simple and basic than they wanted to be. But that is a tough week one matchup for a rookie quarterback going against Todd Bowles. You know, it'd be nice to go after a defensive coordinator that plays a couple coverages and a couple fronts, but not Todd Bowles. He's an odd front, even front. He's in backer jams. He's got stunts, blitzes, cover zeros. He's got it all. So he's just an accomplished coach and a very good coach and a tough matchup for a week one rookie quarterback. And all the rookie quarterbacks struggled. You know, Bo Nix struggled mightily. Caleb Williams looked, didn't look very good either.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the case for these young quarterbacks, and it has been over the course of time. You know, I think last year C.J. Stroud was an anomaly, but for the most part, rookie quarterbacks struggle early in their career.
I was surprised, and maybe I'm missing something. You know, I like to run the ball a little bit more than the average bear. I was surprised they didn't do, you know, I've seen throughout training camp, throughout the offseason, a lot of toss pitches, a lot of, you know, wide kind of runs, getting Austin Eckler downhill and in space and on the edge away from a guy like Vita Vea. It didn't seem like there was a lot of that in the game plan either. Is there any reason that you could think of why that wasn't featured more prominently? I mean, we saw the screen a lot, so that was good, and I was expecting that. I just didn't see the other complementary things that I was looking for.
Yeah, Cliff has always been an inside zone type guy and more of a, you know, the tight end duo type play where they just kind of pound it between the tackles. Going outside takes a lot of time and a lot of work. You got to have a tight end that can hold the point of attack. You got to run weak side. You got a rookie tackle out there. The pursuit with Levante David is pretty good. He's a pretty fast linebacker, goes sideline to sideline. So maybe the matchups just didn't work out for those outside pitches, zone type runs. They try to hammer him inside, but hammer him inside is tough too with Vita Vea standing there. So just a tough matchup all the way around, but they did have some good plays, and I think it was good to see the quarterback scramble around and make some plays. Jaden Daniels looked like he competed till the end and did some things with his legs that they can branch off of and use them hopefully more outside the pocket and maybe get some balls down the field to Terry next week.
I don't think anybody is disputing what kind of competitor Jaden Daniels is already and is going to be. I talked to somebody we both know last night after the game, and they were just singing the praises and making comparisons to former quarterbacks that may or may not have played here in Washington that you may have coached and had some friction with. But the bottom line is how do you as a coach, I mean, it's clear he doesn't know how to baseball slide. How do you as a coach and as a quarterback mentor and guru as you have been get him to be like aggressive and make plays and extend plays with his legs and do all the things that he did really well, but also take care of himself and live for another day?
Yeah, I mean, that's tough. That's because what makes him Jaden Daniels and the number two pick in the draft is his ability to make plays happen with his legs. So you have to allow that to happen. There are some plays that I wouldn't call. I think they call it a quarterback designed run inside zone.
Yeah.
And the pitch at the goal line that he scored on where he cut it back up and got smashed in the face and he scored on. Those are plays that I think you got to be careful of moving forward because he's not a very big guy. And you can take some vicious blows when in between the tackles there. Those are the ones I'm concerned about. When he scrambles outside the pocket on a pass play and he sees running lanes, that's different. But the design runs I'd probably stay away from right now early in the season. But just got to let him play and hopefully things work out. But I think he's a dynamic guy, and I think big plays will happen. I just hope the receivers and can get open a little bit better than they did yesterday.
Yeah, that was a problem, as you pointed out, I think in week three last year, when the receivers were running a lot of similar space routes and, whatever happened last year. All right. So let's get to this. A couple of game decisions, if you will, from Dan Quinn. There was some weird timeouts on offense and defense. I'll leave that alone. Cade York, who's their new place kicker, who's like their 14th place kicker already this year. He missed a 47-yarder earlier. Then they go for it try and kick a 56-yarder on 4th and 10 from the 38-yard line, which you know if he doesn't make, you're handing the ball basically back to the Bucs almost at midfield because of the weird field goal rules. Is that a decision? Like 4th and 10 from the 38, it's not so easy to just say go for it. I mean, I'm more conservative. I would probably try and get Tress Wade a punt, but like, how would you have handled that if you were making that decision yesterday, Jay?
He has a tough call, a rookie kicker, the first year kicker for him. Probably didn't know a lot about him, but surely they had to know that he can make a 56 yarder. That's why they tried it. And there's a lot of kickers, but probably 85% of the kickers in the league will drain that. You know, you saw the Dolphins kicker drain the winner from 56 or 57. So if you're an NFL kicker this day and age, you should be able to make a 56 yarder. 4th and 10 is a little bit too steep of a number to get the first down. You got a rookie tackle, rookie quarterback going against Todd Bowles with the litany of blitzes that he could call. That's a tough down. I think the field goal is probably the right choice. Kicker's got to make it, man. That's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's a little bit different. Certainly that makes sense the way you just described it. The other thing that I wanted to get to was, again, this whole notion of chasing points. So the situation was they score the touchdown on Jaden's first touchdown run. They're down by 10 late third quarter, and he goes for the extra point with the bad kicker. So he makes it, right? And they're down by 9, Jay. But that's still two scores. You know, and his explanation to me when I asked him after the game, why did you do that? I have more possessions. I don't want to chase points. And certainly that makes sense. But again, like, we live in an era where teams are just uber aggressive, especially with 2 point and whatever, and trying to get to within one score. How would you maybe have processed that? And I know it's not a big deal in the end, but would you have gone for two there late third quarter and sort of chasing points, or would you have been more conservative?
Well, you know, I have a lot of respect for Coach Quinn, but he's wrong on that one. He's got to go for two there. Anytime you have a chance to make it a one-score game or change it from a touchdown to a field goal, you got to make that happen, especially late in the third quarter. You don't have that many possessions after that. There's not many left. If it's early in the first quarter, maybe. You know, if it's 8 minutes ago in the first quarter, maybe you kick the extra point and don't chase points. But in my opinion, anytime you have a chance to go from 10 to 8, that is a significant change.
Yeah.
Right. You got to go for two there to cut it to eight and then make it a one possession game, because even if you don't make it, it's still a touchdown field goal. You just don't win it, go into overtime,
or
you
exactly
can go for two on your, so you still have a chance, but you got to go for two there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Jay Gruden is with us again, Ted Britt Automotive Group, with us for another year. So a couple of just one or two more other Commanders things. So Daron Payne started out really strong, was, you know, putting pressure again, not closing that door, as we kind of talked. Same thing with Jonathan Allen. Do you think these guys have just played too many snaps over the last couple of years, and maybe that's why they sometimes can't close the door and maybe sometimes disappear for large stretches? Or do you think that's just the nature of that position?
A little bit of both. I think they, you know, those guys need some rest. I think the great defensive linemen, other than Aaron Donald, they platoon. You don't want them playing 60 snaps a game. They need to play about 35, 40 snaps so they're fresh. And they're playing a new system. Last year was a different system with Ron. The year before when I was there, they had a different system with us. So they're learning a new system, the new calls, and it's probably more up the field slanting and getting penetration a little bit more quicker than they're probably used to. So there's a learning curve there. And I know Dan Quinn likes to stunt, lots of TEs, ETs, TTEs, a lot of that stuff. So they're working through that and the timing with that with Farrell and Armstrong and those other guys up front. So that'll take some time. But I expect those two guys to have another big year. And once they get their feet underneath them and the season goes on and they learn a little bit more and the rush angles that Dan Quinn's looking for, I think they'll be productive again.
What caught your eye besides the struggles of the rookie quarterback week one around the NFL? Just simply the big upsets or big comebacks? You know, certain teams, obviously Buffalo, Pittsburgh going on the road against, you know, against our guy Kirk Cousins there. I mean, my goodness, New England taking advantage of Cincinnati. What, anything jump out at you?
There's some teams that are really struggling. I think Atlanta was a big surprise how poor they were on offense, and Kirk really didn't have much of a chance. You talk about receivers not getting any separation. Got to put on the Atlanta film. Holy cow. And he had no protection either. It was a brutal day. You know, it was the first time Zach Robinson's ever called play, so it's really pretty much tough job for him, especially going against Pittsburgh. But that was a big surprise how much they struggled. I thought they'd play a lot better. Obviously Cincinnati, you know, even though they had, you know, the, other than T. Higgins, they had everybody there. They just couldn't move the ball again. Early in the season, for whatever reason, Cincinnati has struggled. And they did last year.
You're right.
That was a big surprise.
You're right.
And just the lack of growth for a couple of these second-year quarterbacks. You know, I think Carolina, just Bryce Young looked awful. He looked like a kid just out of high school. I mean, he couldn't do anything. And then, obviously, Will Levis, some of the decision-makings he had as a second-year quarterback just are head-scratchers. And, you know, they're still young. They're still going to go through some of these ups and downs, but you just expect these guys to continue to show progress, and they're not. There's a couple quarterbacks that are going to have a quick hook. You know, Gardner Minshew struggled. You know, Bo Nix struggled. So, you know, it's just tough. You know, if you don't have the quarterback playing at a high level and a lot of people helping them, these young guys are going to struggle. Daniel Jones looked absolutely clueless back there. So it's just a lot of concern for a lot of teams early. It's no need to panic after one game, but some of these guys' hearts got to be beating a little bit faster, by the way they played on offense.
Speaking of quarterback struggling, it continues to be a show and not a good one for Deshaun Watson in Cleveland. They were hammered by Zimmer in Dallas. I mean, Zimmer is an ultra-aggressive, I mean, you know, and you know, an old-school coach, so that's still a good defense. But my goodness, Jay, what would you do? I mean, you got all this guaranteed money. I mean, the salary cap hits for next year and the year after are like $75 million because they keep moving money back. And this kid can't stay this young man can't stay healthy, and he's not good when he plays. What do you do there?
He hasn't played well in a long time, and he looked he looked like he hasn't played quarterback in a long time. You got to give him some time, though, because you got a lot of money invested in him. He has shown a couple years of good quarterback play at Houston. That was a long time ago, I get it.
But yeah,
we kind of know what Jameis Winston is. You got to hope that this guy can battle out of it. It's only one game. Hopefully, after about five or six games, they get a better feel for him and prove. And if not, then you got to go to Jameis, because there was really no redeeming qualities of his game against Dallas yesterday.
Dak Prescott got paid yesterday morning, 4 years, $60 million per year extension. You like, or $60 million is too much for a guy that doesn't always play well in the playoffs?
Well, he gets them there. So, you know, he's going to be in a contention for MVP again. He was last year. They just had a miserable game. The whole team had a miserable game against Green Bay last year. So, but yeah, I think if you have a quarterback of that caliber, you got to pay him. That's just the way it is. You know, and if you don't have one, you look at all these teams that we just mentioned that are struggling without a quarterback. Mm-hmm. They have no chance, zero. And if you have a quarterback that can get you to the playoffs, you have a chance to win Super Bowls, and that's what Dak can do, and you got to pay him.
All right, so, Jay, the fans can find you, again, on Twitter, X, whatever, at @Coach_Jay Gruden, also part of the Underdog Fantasy team, right, this year?
Yeah.
So you're doing
some, making some picks. You know, I'm 2-1 on my picks.
Attaboy.
I had Jared Goff's higher 24 completions yesterday. I never got the ball, so I lost. That was my first loss of the year.
They ran the ball in overtime there, and they struggled really on offense. And we didn't even get to that. Was a pretty admirable gutty effort from McVay's Rams team, right? No Puka for much of the game. They're missing their starting tackles. They lost a third early in the game. I think one of their interior guards was banged up and maybe didn't play a whole lot. That was a gutty effort by the Rams.
Sean's had experience coaching with lines that are hurt all the time. Remember, he worked for me. We kind of have a good idea of how to protect your quarterback and function when you don't have any linemen that you know of.
That's good. That's good.
You got to put their name on their helmet.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Walk in on Tuesday afternoon. Hello. Play on Sunday, right?
Yeah. Here's a snap count. Blue 85 set height. Okay. That's step one.
That's a good line. You haven't lost your fastball. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate you as always. I'll talk to you next week. All right.
Thank you, guys.
That is former Redskins head coach Jay Gruden joining us for another year each and every Monday. We have to move it around on a couple of weeks when the Commanders play on Monday Night Football. On air and on the road, Jay Gruden is driven by the Ted Britt Automotive Group. Ted Britt Ford in Chantilly and Fairfax, your F-150 headquarters. Ted Britt Chantilly Lincoln and Ted Britt Chevrolet in Sterling. All home of Ted Britt for life, lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at TedBritt.com. All right, we'll come back, take a break, get back on track here. We'll try and squeeze in if we can get another call or two, and then we have cleanup on aisle three a little bit more on the weekend that was in the sports world. Right, coming up on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, coming up, cleanup on aisle three. We'll visit the weekend for the Nationals in Pittsburgh. They're off today on this Misery Motown Monday. Thanks to Jay Gruden. Some really good stuff there. Excellent line about Sean McVay being used to handicapped offensive lines and shortchanged offensive lines because, well, Sean McVay coached for Jay Gruden. So if you missed any of that, plus his breakdown of Jaden Daniels, Cliff Kingsbury, the run game, why they didn't do certain stuff, Todd Bowles, Todd Bowles, which, you know, again, if you were listening to this show, I can't speak for every other show. If you're listening to this show, we knew that yesterday was going to be a brutal task. And in some ways it was worse than I thought. In some ways it was better than I thought. But man, again, everybody thought like, it's the Bucks. They're not that good. They were only 9-8 last year in a crappy division. You shouldn't just look at it that way. All right, let's get to our guy Dom in Tampa, who unfortunately I wasn't able to hook up with yesterday because of my schedule and the craziness at Raymond James Stadium. And Dom, sorry we couldn't do that, but I know we're going to try and get together in a couple of weeks at Command or whatever they're calling Northwest Stadium in Landover. But I hope, despite the loss and the bad performance, you had a good day on Sunday. How are you, pal?
I'm doing well, Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right. Little
yeah, I hope
you know,
hope
I'm running on fumes.
Hope
so
you
looking
the heat.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the one thing I didn't get, my guy Athan in Annapolis, who was so kind to drive me to the airport on Saturday morning at a very, very, very early time. So I want to thank him. He kept suggesting that I have Portillo's. He gave me two locations, one in Orlando and one in Tampa. And I wound up trying to go to the Portillo's in Tampa, maybe about 12, 13 minutes from the stadium last night, but they were closed already by the time I got out of there. I don't know if you know anything about Portillo's down there, but it's a Chicago-based chain, and they have really good hot dogs and what they call Italian beef, which is like thin-sliced roast beef and au jus, and you know you can get it with sweet peppers and hot peppers and all that stuff. It's like at a Chicago eatery type thing. And I didn't get to go, and I wish I did. And it sucks that I failed in my efforts.
So to your comment there, I have driven past it many times. I have yet to try it.
You gotta try it. You gotta try it. Yeah, you gotta try it.
You know, when you live down here, you know, there's just so many things, so many mm-hmm. places, you know, that you always want to try to, and there's never enough time. But that's definitely on my list of places to go eat.
Attaboy.
So thank you for reminding me. I'm going to yes. get to that as soon as I can here. Hope you enjoy Tampa. I understand, like I said, you know, completely about, you know, you're a busy man, and I will be going to the Cleveland game. So hopefully we can catch up there.
Yes, sir.
I did not expect us to win. But I did not expect us to look as bad as they did, in my opinion. You know, if there's a bright spot, you know, I think it's still early, and I know it's only one game, but I definitely believe that you have something at quarterback. And, you know, unfortunately, it's really hard to say right now because there's just not enough around him. You don't have a number two receiver. You know, Terry McLaurin is a good receiver, but personally, Chris, and I've had conversations with other people too,
mm-hmm.
you put him on a lot of other teams and he's a two, and you know, he's a number two. He's not a bona fide number one, and Tampa Bay showed what happens when you have receivers like a Mike Evans, like a Godwin. You know, they're going to take over games, and that's what happened.
That's a great game because you almost feel like no. And I know he's been handcuffed, but you almost feel like Terry never really takes over a game. And again, different
no.
situation, different offenses, different coordinators, different quarterbacks. But he's been through a lot of quarterbacks down there, Mike Evans too. A lot of different systems, right? I mean, it's not, you know, it's not all peaches and cream for Mike Evans, but Mike Evans just dominates people.
Absolutely. And, you know, I gotta put this one on, you know, AP. And, you know, you kind of really laid an egg by not, you know, attacking the cornerback position more in the offseason. And you had, you know, I get it. You brought in the guy from the Chargers.
Mike Davis,
but, yep. You know, Mike Davis, yeah, but. I don't know. To me, you should have put more investment in one of your weaker positions. You got the quarterback. You went after the quarterback at two.
Yep.
But you got to do more to address your weakest position on defense. And it's going to show. It showed yesterday, and it's going to continue to show throughout the season.
There's plenty of options out there, and they have plenty of money. I mean, you know, Xavier Howard, I don't know how they view him as a scheme fit, but I think he can play in pretty much any scheme that I've seen him. And now, he probably wants too much money, but, you know, it's now past week one, and you don't have to pay veterans a guaranteed salary if they're on the week one roster. So I would look for them to be active
right.
in that market. I don't know if they go there, but I would look for them to be active in the kicker market and in the cornerback market this week.
Yeah, I mean, they just released Cade York not too long ago. Oh, so now we're in the market for a kicker. And, yeah, that just came out a few minutes ago. Step one is finding a new kicker. Step two is to try to fix this cornerback situation, or else it's going to be a long season. But then again, I told you many times I see 5 wins out of this team this year anyways.
Yeah, no doubt. It's going to be tough. I appreciate you, man. Look forward to hanging out and getting to meet you when you come up here again to Northwest. What do they call it? Northwest Stadium, right? Northwest Stadium. I can't remember all these corporate names. All right. Appreciate you, man. Have a good rest of the day. That's our guy, Dominic, down in Tampa. Because he just helped us, let's indeed give you the breaking news in our final trending alert. All right, just after we asked Jay Gruden about him, and we were talking about him earlier in the show and all the bad field position and the decisions, the Commanders have made it very simple. They have announced that they have released kicker Cade York. So they're not even going to apparently have a tryout tomorrow. I mean, they will have a tryout because they need a new kicker, but they're not waiting to release Cade York. Just Dunsky. Good night. Meanwhile, around the NFL, we have the Monday night opener. Tonight it is the return of Aaron Rodgers. Hopefully this season goes longer than last season, which is to say more than 4 players. Coming off the blown Achilles suffered in the Monday night opener last year against the Buffalo Bills, tonight he'll try his luck in near his hometown in San Francisco against the 49ers, the defending NFC champions. You can hear the game. Pre-game coverage beginning at 7:30 right here on the Team 980 and as well the Odyssey app for the New York Jets and the San Francisco 49ers. Meanwhile, the Panthers, a brutal loss yesterday in the debut for Dave Canales and year 2 for Bryce Young, 47-10 in New Orleans. And today, worse news, a potential season-ending injury to his knee for their stud defensive tackle Pro Bowler, Derek Brown. He's going to undergo surgery. Timeline not exactly known. Coming up, cleanup on aisle 3. Nationals with a day off. They'll be featured in that. Stay tuned right here. That's what's trending. All right, so we told you that the Commanders have officially announced that they have released place kicker Cade York. So long farewell. I mean, we told you that was going to be a disaster when they signed him and had no competition, what have you. Ben Standing of The Athletic, and you hear him regularly on with Coach Sheehan on Mondays and Fridays and occasionally with Greg Hoffman. I talk to Ben a lot off the radio, so I don't want to bother him anymore. excuse me, than I already do, is first to report, I believe, that's where I saw it, that the Commanders have replaced Cade York. They are expected to sign veteran place kicker Austin Siebert. Austin Siebert, a former 27 years old, former fifth-round pick in 2019 of the Cleveland Browns. How did that go? Well, not very well, being that they drafted Cade York in the 4th round a couple of years after that. He's kind of bounced around, played his college ball at Oklahoma. He's bounced around between the Browns, the Bengals, the Lions, the Jets, the Saints, back to the Jets, and now with the Washington Commanders. Career statistics, I guess from the last time he kicked in the regular season, if I had this right, according to Wiki, which was week 3, 2022, 44 field goals, 55 attempts, and 80% connection rate. Longest field goal, 53. College career at Oklahoma was a near 80% kicker. Again, has kind of bounced around between practice squads, reserve future contracts, whatnot. He was released at the cutdown just a couple of weeks ago by the New York Jets. Again, his second stint there as he was pushing Greg Zuerlein. So certainly he's got, a bunch of experience, and he's been around, and now he'll get the opportunity to kick this Sunday and perhaps beyond. We will see against the New York Giants. I mean, listen, it can't be any worse than what Cade York was yesterday. Cannot be any worse. You heard Jay. He said, You got to make a 56-yarder. I mean, I was willing to give him a pass. Jay's like, you know, they just 56-yarders are not what they used to be. The 47-yarder was inexcusable. The kickoff out of bounds to allow the ball at the 40, inexcusable. So that's the deal. So Austin Siebert is, according to Ben Standing of The Athletic, is the guy to replace Cade York, who has been officially released. I don't think the team has made Siebert signing official just yet, but it'll happen. And away we go with a 4th already, 4th place kicker of the Dan Quinn, Adam Peters era. Notice how they didn't bring back Brandon McManus. Not that I was expecting them to, but I guess they could have gone there if they wanted to, but they didn't. All right, it is time for cleanup on aisle 3. Let's get to that. I hope Matt's okay with it, because I didn't really ask. What we may have missed, what we forgot, what we need to touch on, what we promoted that we didn't get to. And even if it's just a minute or two, a mention.
Clean up in aisle 3.
Clean up on aisle 3. All right, we mentioned Deshaun Watson's struggles. 33-17, the Dallas Cowboys just destroy the Cleveland Browns in Cleveland. They celebrate Dak Prescott's contract extension by going out and, again, throttling the Browns and Deshaun Watson. But Watson's bad day may have been for a different reason. 24-45, a buck 69 through the air. One touchdown, two interceptions, a rating of 51.1, but there may have, again, been a reason. So he announced over the weekend, I believe it was Saturday, the death of his dad on Instagram, saying, "Rest in peace, Pops," with a broken heart and praying hands emoji with a black background. So Deshaun Watson lost his dad. He was reportedly estranged from his father, but, you know, listen, everybody only has one mom and one dad, you know, that... natural, you're given, you know, that's the way it works, right? So it's never an easy thing to obviously deal with. So again, thinking of the Watson family there in whatever shape and form that they move on. All right. Speaking of tragedy, speaking of death, hate to be the double bearer of bad news, but today in Pennsylvania, they had the dual funeral for hockey star Johnny Gaudreau and his brother, who, of course, were tragically killed in a DWI bike incident in which someone who was allegedly drunk drove into both and killed both the night before their sister's wedding. They had a joint funeral today. We already knew that his younger brother, Matthew, and his wife were pregnant. Today, we found out that Johnny Gaudreau's wife was also pregnant, and she revealed that in her speech. Apparently, she is 9 weeks pregnant, according to what she said, and we're expecting a family of 4 at the funeral. Of course, you know, send our condolences and everything, and then some, to both Johnny and Matt as they were, again, memorialized today by their family and their friends. All right. So while we keep all of that in mind, we also do this. The Nationals, with the day off today, they will resume their action tomorrow night at Nationals Park against the Atlanta Braves, 6:45. Before we get there, the Nationals split 4 over the weekend with the... actually, I'm sorry. Took 2 out of 3, I should say. That's right, because they split. They swept the doubleheader on Saturday, 5-3 and 8-6, including that monster home run that many of you have probably seen the video for from Andres Chaparro, where the pitcher goes immediately down to his knees and was just an absolute hammer job. They did lose 7-3 yesterday. Kind of a lifeless performance, but you'd expect that after sweeping a doubleheader, playing a doubleheader. Again, day off today against Atlanta tomorrow night at Nationals Park. We did not get to see Dylan Cruz versus Paul Skeens, which kind of sucks, right? Number 1, number 2 overall pick, so we're going to have to wait until next year. Nationals come in and come back home 15 games under 500 at 64-79. The Atlanta Braves are 78-65. But again, the Nationals did take the first two of that set, so they did win their weekend series in Pittsburgh. And finally, again, Monday Night Football tonight against the New York for the New York Jets against the San Francisco 49ers. Apparently, Netflix is coming out with a three-part docuseries on Aaron Rodgers coming up shortly. I think they're calling it Enigma. There is so much on TV. There is so much on Netflix. I can't even get through Hard Knocks. There's just too much live sports on to watch all these shows and docs. I have no idea how people do it. But if you're interested, not only is there the new book, but there's also a new docuseries. So if you got nothing to do and you got a lot of time for your remote, I guess you can watch that. And that is how we do Clean Up on Aisle 3.
Clean Up on Aisle 3.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, indeed. Coming up next, we'll wrap up the show. Dumb Dumb of the Day. Wait till you hear what this former politician had to do in California. That's next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, wrapping up a Misery Motown Monday. She's a very freaking girl. Little Rick James for you, super freak, and you'll know why in just a little bit. First, we tell you Craig Hoffman is coming up less than 10 minutes away with his thoughts on a week one debacle, probably the better word, plus more on Cade York and Austin Siebert, the next place kicker for the Washington Commanders. But first, you know how we do.
It's time for Dumb Dumb of the Day.
No, it was not me for showing up at Orlando International Airport just after midnight, being locked out of security until 3 a.m., and then sitting on a hard chair for another 2 hours at the gate waiting for my flight just to get back home for you people. Just so I didn't miss this fandangled show. Nope, not me, although that was pretty stupid. I admit I should have gotten a hotel. I am a dumbass. But this headline, state senator, current state senator, I said former, current, forced, allegedly, her former chief of staff to perform sex acrobatics, not just sex.
What?
Sex acrobatics. That left him with back and hip injuries, according to a lawsuit that he has now filed. So she is a California state senator, Senator Marie Alvarado Gill. Her former chief of staff, Chad Condit, hit her with a lawsuit last week. Now, she recently went from Democrat to Republican, whatever. I don't care about that. But the suit claims that she pressured him into performing sex acts on her when they traveled for work. Now, he is married. He claims he relented and performed the acts on his boss over the years as part of a, quote, sex-based quid pro quo relationship in order to protect his job, according to the suit filed in Sacramento Superior Court. Apparently, during their final encounter, the man alleges, he suffered a debilitating back injury while having to twist and contort as he performed oral sex on the senator in a car, leaving him with three herniated discs. I said discs. And a collapsed hip. He was then fired in December after repeatedly making it clear that sexual advances were no longer welcome and that he was undergoing back surgery, according to the lawsuit. I just gotta be honest. I mean, you know, like, I don't know. Probably not a good thing to be sleeping with your boss. under whatever circumstances. Yes, Russ. Yes. Yeah, Russ, we need you to play first. We need you to play first. Before we let's ride, we need you to play. All right? And that, people, is how we do it.
Congratulations. You're Chris's dum-dum of the day.
Oh, yeah. Senator, not this poor guy. I mean, I kind of feel bad for him. But Senator Marie Alvarado Gill? Sounds like she's got a lot going on. Sounds like she's in a hanky-panky. And sounds like she's got a big problem on her hands. I don't know how it's going to come out. Sex acrobatics! That's a new term. I've never heard that. Is that what they call it? Is that what the kids call it now? Sex acrobatics? Never really heard that term. I don't know. If anybody knows anything about it, let me know. At WrestleMania621. Back tomorrow with the DOC. Thanks to Matty Ice. Thanks to all the calls. Thanks to Jay Gruden for joining us. Craig Hoffman up next. Have a great Monday. Don't forget 49ers Jets here on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app coming up at 7:30 tonight. Adios.